All right, we are back. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and I have Mr. Swarthout with us today. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very good today, man. It is a beautiful day here in Minneapolis. We actually have sun. It's not raining. We had a freeze warning last night, so that's always wonderful in early June, is to make sure your tomatoes freeze out and die. But whatever. It's good, man. I'm happy. It's a great day. It's Monday, and I'm totally stoked.
Yes. You didn't listen to our last with Judy at the end. We were talking about scraping the moon with enthusiasm, or just blitzing everybody. When your tomatoes die, that might be just a little too extreme for people,
Well, I'm gonna bellyache about it on Facebook and just let it go from there. Because social media seems to be the place when you just want to let everybody hear how much your life is terrible and how much you want to cry about things, and that's where it seems to be now. So I'm just going to bellyache about it on Facebook.
Me too, because it's funny, I'm not a weather guy normally, because most of the sports that I've always played have always been inside sports, so weather really wasn't a big deal. But I'm telling you, I think I'm getting close to whining about the weather. Because it's been a long time since we had 3 or 4 sunny days in a row. So
that's true. But we talked a long time ago about how just being a Minnesotan is a sport in of itself, and it's like a tough sport, right? And if you're a Minnesotan, you're like essentially a pro athlete in comparison to other places in this world, because we have to put up with
true.
A lot.
Yes, that is true. All right. So today, what does everybody know? Mr. Swarthout is actually a very accomplished triathlete and cyclist, and is the coach of the USA Triathlon team. So he has a very unique perspective on the world of triathlon, and also he runs, is it hundreds of events a year? I imagine. I see you doing
millions.
Cool thing.
Millions of events.
Millions of events. He is the superhero
event
number
as
one.
We speak.
That's true. That probably is true. Probably running more than one.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. Juggling them.
Exactly. All right, so with that, we had talked about new, cool ideas that some marketing guy thought up that would be cool for triathletes to have, or they actually have a performance enhancer and they actually do work. Which subject do you want to talk about first?
Well, I was going to talk about both and just kind of hit it from a swim, bike, run perspective. Talk about some, first of all, about, things in a swim that I see a lot of people using, things that are practical, things that are impractical, why and why not, and just kind of move on down the line, if that's okay with you.
I'm all good with that.
So, as a disclaimer here, triathletes are notorious gadget nerds, right? We do three sports. We see people doing in singular sports. We see something and we got to jump on it in spades. So triathletes will watch the Tour de France and they'll go to their local cyclist shop or the bike shop and they'll beg for whatever gadget they see, like Bradley Wiggins using, on the time trial, and they'll go, dude, that was like handcrafted by the people who make those bikes, and those won't be available for 3 years. And triathletes will be going, but I need it. Or we will put things like compression socks through the ringer because they see somebody wearing compression socks. Well, hey, it must be 12 times better for us to actually use them on the run. Well, that's not nearly the case. So what we see is anytime that somebody wants to sell a gadget, they sell it to triathletes because we will buy them up. So if we're looking at the swim, there's a couple of things that work as far as that I see, especially in the pool, because that's 9 times out of 10 where we're practicing, that are very practical and that are very impractical, and for different reasons. And sometimes people don't see it that way. So, one of the things that I have seen a lot of people using lately are these MP3 players that go in the pool. They have earbuds. It's either a little bag that your iPhone can go into. It's a special iPod, or it might be something that just clips onto your goggles and gives you something to listen to while you're swimming. Well, this kind of technology has been used by synchronized swimmers for years, where they put the speaker in the bottom of the pool and it resonates. And for anybody that's actually had to do a swim set through or while a synchro team was practicing and had to listen to Footloose over and over and over and over again will know that maybe sometimes that's not the right thing. Because I actually did it. I sat through, I swam through an hour-long training session where a synchro team from YZ was swimming, and I listened to Footloose for an hour, and I almost got out and shot myself in the ear. And so it was that bad. But so why is it good? Why is it bad? Good, you know, it breaks the monotony if you're doing a long, just straight set. Right. The bad thing is that a lot of testing has been done about the performance enhancement of music. You see people running marathons. You see people doing all kinds of stuff with headphones in because they got their, you know, their super sweet run set and they want to like get motivated and blah, blah, blah. And while it does motivate and maybe break the monotony, what it does actually do as a main item is it takes your mind off of technique. Well, that's not good. So technique is king with any sport, especially with budding athletes. When they're working on increasing the proficiency of their technique, either whether it's running or swimming very much so, when you need to concentrate on technique, you need to have almost utter silence so you're thinking about that solely. Think about golfers. When's the last time you saw a golfer wearing headphones? Or when's the last time you saw a lot of people talking or music in the background at a PGA tournament? You know, you go and watch golf, and it is dynamically different than it is going to watch the Timberwolves. You go to a Timberwolves game, you might think that you're at the club, right? You're like, oops, 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 like even during the time that they're playing, right? Because they're shooting the ball into a hoop, which is, you know, that has skill in and of itself, but the technique of it might be a little bit different. Versus golf, it's all about concentration and execution of technique, and that's where swimming mimics golf. So if you think about putting earbuds in to listen to your favorite jam out tune, whatever it might be, what you're going to do is you're going to end up thinking about the music and not thinking about your technique. Ultimately, you're going to be swimming less proficiently, and it won't work. So for the people that are learning to be better swimmers, I would say steer away from the $160 investment of the earbuds or whatever you might be spending that's going to kind of break your time in the pool.
I think I'm going to add one, because I think you had mentioned the technique might change. But that technique making may lead you to injury too. You know, if you're doing some repetitive problem, you know, where you're not in that same technique you normally have been, you're setting yourself up maybe not next week and it may not all of a sudden break on you. But 6 months down the road, you know, a year down the road and you start having problems, it could be simply because of what we're talking about.
Absolutely. And what you're doing is you're putting time into training and you're not actually making any – you're just working out because you're not making any improvements on your technique. And if you're not making improvements on technique, then you're just spinning your wheels and you might as well just kind of go home because it's not what you're out there to do. So that's one thing that I would put to rest and I would save for a later time. One of the more practical items that I think people can make an investment into for swimming nowadays that is less expensive – is a swimmer snorkel. So it's not like you think about when you were a kid, you know, and you went to Walgreens and got a snorkel and mask so you could go look at the perch in the bottom of the lake when you're out at the beach. This is a front-facing snorkel that's used as a swimming aid. What it does is it actually goes in. It's just like a regular snorkel. It goes in your mouth, has a headband that goes around your head, and the snorkel goes up through the front. And that is just that's for proficiency because it doesn't want to waggle on the side of your head. What a snorkel does is it allows you to keep your head down. It allows you to be more cognizant of your swim stroke because you can actually watch it and use your peripherals. It also allows you to breathe a little more efficiently. So for people that have an issue with breathing, it gives you basically full air, so you don't have to worry about holding your breath underwater, so you can breathe a lot more efficiently. But it also helps with an overtraining issue for people that breathe only to one side. If you see that car in a carpal tunnel issue with your neck and with your shoulder, if you're always breathing on the right side, how do you break that? Well, one of two ways: either bring a snorkel in where you're always looking at the bottom, or you start to learn to breathe to the other side. Now, sometimes breathing to your non-dominant side can be difficult for newbies, but getting over just the preliminary stigma of having a snorkel in your mouth while you're swimming, you can make great improvements. You'll see a lot of collegiate and professional and top high school swimmers that will train with snorkels specifically just to concentrate on technique. And I think it's a great, great product. But it's one that a lot of, adult non-athletes have steered away from because they think it looks kind of funny. So the swimmer snorkel would be good. Another thing, just to kind of wrap up the swimming portion, is I've seen a lot of people now using these lap counters, which is like a little, looks like a little watch that goes in your finger, and you essentially just touch it as you're going through laps and making flip turns. Right now, these things can be expensive. They can be as expensive as $100, $150. Now, I say go lowbrow on this stuff. If you have a hard time like me counting higher than four in the pool, which is laps, and you're trying to do a longer set, what I would suggest doing is doing one of two things. Either having either bringing, like, say, a handful of pennies and putting them up on the pool deck and moving them in, like, an abacus style on the pool deck after every, say, 100 or 200 set, which is every, you know, two or four laps, or taking the pool lane markers and sliding them like an abacus every 100 or 200 yards. What you can do is you can count your longer sets more accurately without taking long breaks. You can do them in a touch, slap, turn with like in less than a second. And what you'll do is you'll be able to count your laps without having to go, okay, was that four or was that five? Was that seven or was that eight? Because I get lost all the time. And unless you have somebody on the end of the lane counting them for you, you need to have some sort of accurate way. Well, instead of buying something that you're touching all the time, which is, you know, going to throw off your swim stroke anyways, you're going to be thinking about that, why not just take the 1 second and do the low end of the technology and utilize something that's already there? So you either got a 5 or 10 cent or a free option to help you kind of overcome that counting issue, which is, I think, essential.
You know, and I have just one kind of side story, though. If a triathlete shows up with an MP3 player hooked on their goggles, a swimmer snorkel, and something hooked on their finger, that wouldn't be a pretty sight. You definitely don't want your picture put on Facebook with that.
Well, you know, I could tell you could probably walk to any pool right now and find that. Because you're going to know they're a triathlete because, I mean, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be having a pool buoy in between their legs, and they're going to say, well, I have no reason why I shouldn't have that because I swim with a wetsuit all the time. You know, and so, there's a million different stereotypes for triathletes in the water, and, you know, we're notoriously bad for you know, just manipulating every trend that comes down the road. But, yeah, you'll see them with a bag full of gadgets. It's almost like Felix the Cat coming to the pool.
Exactly. But I do have to admit, I think you're spot on even more so than just, you know, a gear trend with the injury thing. I just, if you start, these gadgets can be good, like the swimmer snorkel, which is good for an injury, but on the other hand, something can be bad too. You have to really be aware of what's going on rather than just, hey, my buddy got one, so he said it was cool, you know, type of a scenario.
You could even take it a step further by building yourself a swim anchor or a tether that doesn't allow you to go anywhere in the pool and you're swimming in place. Use your snorkel, swim in place with your snorkel, and then have a mirror below you, and now you can sit and actually watch your technique through every stroke. And I've used that with swimmers quite often, where I actually have them swim in place over a mirror and using the snorkel, and then they can sit and watch every stroke and make great strides with stroke correction.
See, it's interesting you said it because that's like a simple solution. That isn't, I mean, it's not cool to say you went and bought a boat anchor and a tether.
It's true. It's all in the practicality of the end product, and that's what we really try and shoot for.
All right, so now in the last 10 minutes or so, we're going to move off to the bike and the run, which I'm sure the bike gets a lot of different cool
exactly.
stuff there, I'm sure.
We're gonna focus on two main training aids that kind of can cross over from bike to run, and that's electronic GPS meters or wattage meters. Wattage meter is a product that will actually tell you how much energy that you're expelling on the bike. Watts are a unit of measure, which is defined by force times cadence, and force is measured in torque. That is measured either in one of basically three areas on the bike. There's a couple of products that are that have been on the market for quite a long time that measure that torque either in the rear hub of the wheel, that measure it in the crank set, or in the bottom bracket. There's a couple out that have kind of that are playing around and measuring it in the pedal area. Not a big fan of that because if your bike falls over, what's the first thing to hit the ground? Normally, it's your pedals. So why would you have a $1,500 product that's going to hit the ground first on your bike? So I'm going to touch on two main kind of ideas about wattage meters and where they are in the bike and why you should choose one. So if you are a pure cyclist, I would suggest an SRM. An SRM is a brand that is that measures wattage or measures the torque through the crankset, and that would be in the bottom, that would be near the bottom bracket of the bike where your pedals are. Why that's good is because it's a lighter product that you can use while you're racing and while you're training. But the drawback is that it can only stay with that bike for most people unless you're willing to change out your cranksets and everything every time you change your bikes. So if you're a pure cyclist and you're going to be using the wattage meters for your workouts, which tell you exactly how hard you're going or how hard you're not going or what you're pacing, then you're going to want to use something in the bottom bracket if you're a road cyclist. Now, for triathletes, we normally will train on a couple of different bikes. We'll normally train on either a road bike and also a TT bike that we'll race with. What we want to see there is what I normally like to see is I like to see that wheel or that measurement then move back to the rear hub. Why? Because I can buy a singular wattage meter and move it from bike to bike to bike by just changing out that rear wheel, assuming that both bikes are using the same wheel size, which is what it is normally now. So I can train on and use wattage during training on my time trial bike, and I can use wattage on my road bike at the same time, getting that data, getting that workout information, and recording that data very specifically. People will then say, well, if I want to race in a triathlon and record my wattage data, then I have to go out and get a special, you know, another wheel for that. My answer for that normal feedback question is that unless you're in an Ironman race where you're using wattage as a unit of measurement for control or for pacing, then you don't really need to have anything that will mark your speed or output for those shorter races. So if you're doing like what I did this weekend, which is a sprint triathlon, and you're using a some sort of meter to say, am I going hard enough? My answer to that is, if you're ever questioning, am I going hard enough? The answer is no, you're not going hard enough. And so, unless you're doing an Ironman, which is a substantially long bike ride, bookcased by a long swim and a marathon, you don't need to know exactly where that is. You can train and do practice rides and training rides to know where that wattage should be, and then that should be part of it. But the wattage should be used very specifically. It shouldn't just be used as a testosterone meter to say how hard did you go or how many meters how many watts did you generate for this one. Because a lot of times people get one and they go, oh, I just went, you know, blah, 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 blah watts. And I'm like, that's not what you're using it for there, numbskull. You need to use it for other things.
If you use that
product, you can also get also other aftermarket products that can have that same readout, so you can upgrade those units, because all those units do is they track the information that you're generating on the bike. It doesn't track it doesn't track GPS most times. So it'll give you rise, it'll give you elevation, it'll give you in the products now will actually show you what the gradient is of the current road that you have. But they don't show you GPS. So you can actually integrate a nice Garmin piece into that, which will then show you a GPS route. So when you're done and you want to crunch all your numbers like most triathletes want to do afterwards, you can then upload that Garmin information, and you can either use another, like a small little readout head that will attach to your bike stem, or you can have something like a Forerunner 310 XT, which would be like almost like a big wristwatch. But those products then can then translate from the bike over to the run, which would give you a good amount of information. And the nice thing is the products nowadays are using this level of technology called ANT Plus, A-N-T plus sign, which is a way for them to communicate through a number of different products. And you can also do some of those where they will communicate to your phone, so you could actually use your iPhone as a digital readout. And even SRM is actually using a way for owners to communicate the data that's being produced in a test mode from their bike to the customer service using their iPhone, where you actually just call customer service. They have you call them through your iPhone, then it actually picks up what your bike is doing, and they can actually service your bike through your iPhone, which is an amazing bit of technology that I learned, which is actually just cool as all heck. So as a triathlete, yeah, I was very impressed by that one.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I think you solved in your scenario is so many people have three different brands of gadgets, or they just can't seem to get them all to work together. You know what I mean? And you, with the idea you propose, is they all can integrate, and you don't have to have, three different wheels, three different forms. One's on tension, one's on, torque, and all this sort of thing. You can have a one simplified solution, and realize that you may have to omit a certain area, but it's not needed. Fantastic ideas. Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Now off to the run.
Well, I think the run can cross over a little bit with that basic technology. You know, running is a very simple simple bit of activity that you really don't need a whole lot for. Most of the technology changes that we see either come in the quality of clothing, and we've seen technical clothing come a long ways in the last, say, 10 years. And anybody who goes out and runs in basketball shorts and a cotton T-shirt is really doing themselves a big disservice, because there's a lot of different types of and styles and colors of technical clothing that will make things a lot more comfortable for you, will eliminate the idea of even chafing, and not make you look like you're, Meb Kobleski running through the Boston Marathon with these, like, little Mangina shorts on that, you're not sure if that you're actually supposed to, wear something underneath those. So clothing has come a long ways, and for that I just say go out and shop around, because there's just a million different styles. If you're a woman, you like my wife, Lululemon makes freaking anything under the sun, because Lord knows my wife comes home with everything from there. And they actually make some men's clothes, which is nice. But Nike and Adidas and pretty much anybody makes great clothing. You can actually find great technical clothing at Target if you go there. So you don't have to shop for, things don't have to be super expensive. The other thing is, we're seeing a lot in the new move in shoes is what they call zero drop shoes. These are running shoes that have don't have a heel on them, and they allow for the runner to run flat so that they can run with more of a little bit of a flexed ankle when they're running on their midfoot. There's no cushion there, so this is, again, kind of that next generation of midfoot running, and we've talked quite a bit about that on the show, about midfoot running and some of the benefits of it and what are the trends and the reasons for it and why not. But you're seeing more manufacturers that are coming out with what they call a zero drop, or essentially a flat heel, for the sole of the shoe. I like those. I don't know that I'm not 100% sold on them. I understand the technology. I understand that. I still think you can get the same thing from a lightweight trainer. But it is something that I have been tracking, and it does seem to be that kind of that new trend that's coming out. And I'm sure you'll see a lot of shoes. And and then essentially once you see Skechers produce a zero drop shoe, then you know that it's a full on blown fad. So,
well, I think that it's interesting, because I was reading something the other day, and they said that for the first time, it's kind of getting to that point where it's either going to tip over and become part of the mainstream, or is it going to stay and kind of die into the fad bucket, if you will. And they were actually showing that there was some, it's not growing as fast now, so it's kind of starting to taper at the top, so to speak. So I think you may be onto something to say that, great idea, specific use, yes, particular person, yes, not everybody. But they do need to learn how to properly run, which we've talked about that as well. That might be the better solution than changing your footwear.
Absolutely. Don't get lost in buying something that's going to make you better. You need to. It's not what you're buying that's making you better. It's the technique that's making you better. You can go out and buy a big golf club. It doesn't make you hit the ball any farther unless you really know how to swing that club. Because I tell you, my grandma can hit farther than me, and she's using clubs that are probably produced in 1965. And just because I get to go out and drop $500-$600 on a big Bertha, which I don't even know if that's the most popular golf club anymore or how much those cost, but I just made that up because, you know, 43% of all statistics are made up on the spot, that you know, that's the same idea right there. You know, and just to kind of close the loop here, in running, for the same reason why I don't suggest people wear headphones for swimming, I also say the same thing for running. In training, don't wear headphones because it actually lowers your capability for producing at a high level because your body ends up acclimating to the cadence of the music, whereas you want, instead of holding a 90 cadence, which is what you want to have, instead of focusing on the run focus technique that you have, or either where you're with your foot strike, you end up focusing on, you know, Eminem saying go harder and don't lose yourself in the music or whatever it is. And then and then ultimately, if you're one of these people that wears headphones at a race, I say fooey on you, because why would I want to cheer for somebody that can't hear me cheer for them while they're running? So that's
that
my okay. I am stepping off the soapbox now, because that is that is my soapbox issue of the day.
I think that's, I mean, you can name it a soapbox issue, but I think it has validity. It's beyond soapbox to me. I mean, I think that makes sense. I think so many people, even at a standpoint of they have lost relationships, and they don't even realize it because they're sitting there listening to headphones all the time. And in that interaction of just being around people, the enthusiasm of the moment, who wants to sit there listening to the same music you listen to tomorrow? Why don't you live in the moment, enjoy the people around you, enjoy what people are accomplishing? Dude, I don't think that's a soap opera. I think that's true.
Yeah, that's what I do. I mean, it's a little bit awkward when you're, like, you know, at a marathon and everybody's, you know, you're cheering for everybody that's running by, and then you just stop for a second, and then you start cheering again.
It's about the same as receiving a text halfway through while somebody's finishing the race, and you get a text and you got to stop and look at the text before you actually see them finish.
I've seen people do that. I actually had a client once that called me from the course at an Ironman triathlon. The client was on the bike. Something had happened. They were very depressed. They were crying because they had a mechanical issue. And my first question was, what the hell are you doing with your phone on the course? Why are you calling me? I'm like 50 miles away from you. Okay, I understand. I'll try and help you through this. But what are you doing?
Exactly.
Come on.
All right, Chris. We've already come to the end. Half an hour.
Oh.
Accomplished the mission.
Parting
is a sweet
song.
Where can people get a hold of you? Yes.
They can get a hold of me on Facebook, just Chris with a K, Swarthout. Swarthout, friend me. Everybody else does, and I love to make contact there. Otherwise, get a hold of me on email, chris.swarthout@optum.com. Be more than happy to answer any questions that anybody has.
Done. And spell Swarthout.
Swarthout. And it's also Chris with a K, spelt the girl's way.
Yes, and nobody ever that I've known of have ever had trouble pronouncing your name, for sure. I don't know.
No, it is very good, especially you, Stephen, because you are that is a skill you have mastered.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Chris. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, we're going to switch gears now after going down the road of triathlon and gadgets, and we're going to move over to Trish O'Hara. And we're going to kind of come back to a subject that we talked about earlier, because I think so much is done in the world of studies, and then there's reality. And so with that, we're going to move over to a commercial break. We'll be back with Trish O'Hara.
Five Star Basketball, the leader in basketball instruction and camps. Endorsed by Michael Jordan, Dick Vitale, and Hubie Brown, and where the teaching never stops. Five Star Basketball Minnesota will be hosting a one-day instructional camp on May 18th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will be hosted by Five Star, The McCarthy Project, and Grassroots Hoops. For more information on the camp, visit themccarthyproject.com/5-star. XL Athlete is the leading provider of online strength and conditioning and speed development camps. For more information on their training programs and speed development camps, visit xlathlete.com.
All right, we are back. This is Stephen McCarthy from the McCarthy Project, and we are coming to you live from Minnesota, where we've been attacking life and sport since 2001. And I think one of the subjects that I think we've been talking about earlier today was the world of science and gadgets and the world of reality. And so much in this world is centered around gadgets nowadays. And I think Tricia will have a unique perspective on this, in that how do you accomplish life if you don't have gadgets, or you don't have this, or you don't have that? How do you still get through magically, which everybody would assume that you are not able to accomplish a mission because you don't have this fancy piece of equipment, or you don't have this fancy watch, or whatever cool stuff you want to have. How are you doing today, Tricia?
I'm fine. Thank you, Stephen. How are you?
Doing very well. I want to thank you, first of all, publicly for working with the schedule today. I think I have put you through the ringer, and so I'm very thankful for that. And Tricia has a very unique history for all the people that are listeners that have not heard her before. She has, on one hand, was raised as an orphan and did not have much, and basically was transferred home to home. To now, she works with some very affluent, clients, I guess is the best way to put it. And so she is seeing both sides of this equation. And today's subject has become gadgets, or science says that you need to understand exactly where you are in space, exactly at this point. You need to be hooked up to this GPS so that you can track every step, that type of a scenario. The science says that that's what you need to do, but reality says that if you are so hooked into this science, what are you thinking? Are you thinking about the science? Are you thinking about what your body's doing? And so before we take a step back, is how do you view, first of all, what is your viewpoint of gadgets, and how do you use them, if you do, in the world of triathlon and running and the different events that you compete in?
Well, it's funny you say that, Stephen, because I've worked with the Fuller Heart Rate Monitor for quite a number of years now, I think since I began triathlon many years ago. And I saw the latest gadget is to get the one with the GPS, because the foot pod kind of sucks. So I decided to go that route. And being here in New York City, where there's tall buildings, and being in London, where there's tall buildings, it's really hard to pick up the GPS. So I've been on the phone numerous times with Polar, with Wayne at Polar, and saying, Wayne, this is not working. And he sent me a new watch, and he sent me a new GPS activator. And anyway, so it's kind of funny you say that, because he said, okay, set it up near the window and let it track the GPS for like 15 minutes first. Okay, done. So I do that. It picks up the GPS. I start my run. I start it through Central Park, and it all of a sudden goes blank, and it's not picking up anything. So then I reset it, I stop, wait for it to pick up again, then I start again, and it's just, you know, it becomes like a nightmare, because then I'm not really enjoying my run. So to go back to your question about science and relying on these gadgets, since this heart rate monitor doesn't seem to want to be reliable 50% of the time when you're in big cities and it's blocked by all the buildings and all that stuff, then I go back to, how is Tricia feeling? So I just kind of start forming my workouts more on perceived exertion, what my energy level is for that day, and where my body and my mind are at, and I just go off of that, because it just becomes too frustrating if I'm trying to track down the, you know, with the GPS and trying to keep that and monitor the cadence and everything. So I think sometimes, you know, gadgets are great, but they can be addictive. It's also like when I swim in the pool. I can't stand swimming. I'm a runner. So for Ironman being, you know, one of the legs obviously is swimming 2.5 miles, 2.4 miles. You had to swim in training many, many laps, which I thought, you know, I just wanted to put a bullet in my eye because it was completely boring for me. So I found the great invention of the waterproof MP3, which is awesome. And so I'm listening to it the other day. I go out for a 2.5 mile swim and was kind of tired because it's extremely hot here in New York City. And just felt really lethargic, but I cranked the tunes and started, you know, started the swim and was feeling really great. After about 2 miles, it blacked out. And I'm like, dude, this like totally sucks. I have like another 1/2 mile to go. And but so the last song that was playing, I just kept playing it over and over again in my head. So I do have to say that gadgets are addictive, but you know, it's for me it actually does really help to listen to music on your, you know, iPod, iPhone, whatever, when you're running. I like to be able to track my GPS because it enables me to push myself, because it also has a cadence on it, so it allows me to push myself when I'm doing tempo runs. And for swimming, it's, you know, you put a great playlist on the MP3 and it, you know, powers me through the hour and a half swim. So it's, I think there's, you know, good and bad points with them, as long as they're working, to answer your question.
That is, and it's funny because more times than not, What I'm seeing, you know, in the world, and you have the, because I think you have the unique position of being successful before gadgets, you know what I mean? And
you can
go on to your own. Whereas you see the younger generation, you know, they've been so focused on gadgets that they can't get off of them. You know what I mean? And, you know, and all of a sudden, if this were to happen to a young athlete that's trained with their heart rate monitor and their GPS for the last, you know, 2 years, and all of a sudden it don't work, well, their whole workout's going to be shot until it gets fixed.
Right.
Yeah. And so.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Where they get so focused in on. Now, this is the question I have for you, because I think in the world of endurance sports, this is, there is an art form to it, but yet there is a tremendous amount of science, you know, and tremendous, very, very smart people that have researched triathlon and cycling and all this and wrote millions of books upon it. But when you come down to it, there are the studies and what science says, and then there is reality. And then how do you marry those two? Because, I mean, you come down into a position where we had Judy Freeman on earlier, where she made 3 major changes, and her first three races went into the tank because she made too many changes based on the science. And then she slowly worked them, you know, kind of re-engineered or reverse-engineered them, and now her success has come back. What are your viewpoints on these?
Can you give me an example real quickly, Stephen? Like, what was her her default?
Well, her default was she changed the length of the crank arm on her bike, and it basically, you know, it changed her position. All of a sudden, she had a small injury; it became a major injury. You know, it's kind of like almost like, have you heard like the tennis players that did a new, you know, shoe contract, and now they're wearing Adidas, you know, versus Nike. And all of a sudden now they got foot problems because they've used these other shoes for so long, now they're switching to the others. And that's what happened to her. And so she had to go back, put the regular crank arm, but science told her that one, the shorter one was the better one, if that makes sense.
Right, but I think it's all personal preference. Everyone, you know, everyone's body is different. Everyone's mind is different. And I think you just really have to focus on what works for you, because you can have, like, for instance, my bike is Cervelo. It works great for me. But for perhaps someone that's bigger, it might not be the frame for them, even though, you know, Cervelo is one of the top bikes. So I really think that it's up to the individual. You know, I modeled for Nike since, you know, gosh, since I was young, it's probably last 20 years. And so I always, you know, I got all the Nike gear for free. I was their fit model. And the shoes, when I started doing longer distance running, I felt compelled to always wear Nike, obviously, but at the same time I was modeling for Asics and Brooks and Adidas, so I had their shoes too. And but I stuck to Nike since that was one of my main clients. And what I noticed when I was running longer distance is I started having problems with my soleus and my peroneal, the lower part of my leg, and that my IT band on the side of my leg, because there was too much cushion and not enough support in the Nikes. And so I had to make the decision, okay, am I going to keep working or wearing the Nikes because I represent them, or am I going to go with another one of the manufacturers? So I had to, you know, I started wearing ASICS. So there's nothing wrong with the Nike shoes. It just, as I got into longer distance, it didn't work for me. Now, that could be different now, but so to answer your question, I think it's, you really have to listen to your body, and you have to find out what works for you. I mean, science can say this is what you should be doing, and I think, you know, on a personal level, you should be doing what's right for you. And what's right for you isn't necessarily right for the next person next to you. So that's my two cents.
I think there's an art form to it. Do you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
You know, if you've got the budget to try a lot of things, well, then that's fine. You know,
mm-hmm.
But you really do want to stick to your knitting. If you've been successful with a certain, you know, a certain setup, if you will, then going to a new setup isn't necessarily going to always make you better. So, and the funny thing
okay.
is, in Judy's case, she changed the stem length on her bike, and that
right.
worked out fantastic immediately. But then she changed the crank arm length, and that didn't work out. And so it really does become, in my mind anyways, an art form. You could take all the science in the world and you can weave the idea down, but in the end, it is an art form and it is personal preference, 100% with that.
Stephen, did she get, why did she change her crank? Did her coach say that she needed to go with a smaller crank or a larger crank? And when she did change it, did she get refit on her bike? Because, you know, when you get locked in, you know, when you have clipped in pedals, you have to make sure that you're clipped in correctly. Otherwise, if you're off by millimeters, then that can wreak havoc on your knees, on your hips, on your back, all the way up, especially if you're in the bike, in the saddle for a long period of time, training for a distance like Ironman or half Ironman or Ultraman. So
you just explained it all. She did everything that you're saying. She did get a fit. She did make
mm-hmm.
changes, and she
mm-hmm.
realized the results of what you're talking about. And then she switched back, and now her injuries are subsiding. So really, it's an interesting, because she would be the first to admit, she admitted earlier, she said, you know, I made too many changes too fast to have it come together the way I wanted. And when she switched back, and then she got herself fixed, you know, on a musculoskeletal side, you know, like
mm-hmm.
at a body level, she was able to get herself back, and now she's got the results you want. So everything you said in about three sentences, she went through and felt and has fixed. So it's been fantastic that you confirmed that. I think that's the beauty of when you're onto the right path, how amazing how you don't even have to know what's going on necessarily, but you can
mm-hmm.
figure it out.
Well,
amazing
what was her reasoning? What was her reasoning? I'm sorry, maybe I missed this. What was her reasoning at the beginning to change anything?
Science said that
okay.
she was going to be faster at this crank arm length than
yep.
what she was currently at or what she was training at. And so
okay.
they had a new sponsor, and I think it's always the beautiful thing about endurance athletes and tinkering. You know, they
mm-hmm.
always want to tinker. Well, maybe I can be better. Maybe I'm missing it, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, she hit it on one, the stem length, but then didn't hit it on the crank arm length.
I see.
And
okay,
then
and
she,
started having
yes,
issues.
Yes, exactly. And so exactly what you're saying is that and she would be the first to admit, it was me making a decision to go ahead and move ahead. It had nothing to do with her sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
She was looking to get a little bit better. You know, and so it was just a funny thing when you get down to it, do you realize that when you're really competing and you're putting a lot of time into your sport, small changes become big ones,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yes.
and you have to be very careful. You have to be very, very careful.
Right.
So,
well, especially with a discipline like Ironman or triathlon, your body gets so tuned in to those three disciplines that the minute you alter anything, it's like huge, you know, and you don't realize it until, well, sometimes after the fact, like she did. But, you know, the beauty of it is that you can go back and correct it. You know, as long as you didn't fall into injury, you know.
Or you didn't go into the dumps mentally, you know, because that's another thing, too.
Right.
When you get
uh-huh.
to making changes, you get there and all of a sudden, you know, you don't get the results you're looking for. Your body's not feeling 100%. It's very
right.
easy to fall into the ditch of, you know, this is stupid, this is bad, I'm done,
uh-huh.
I'm out of here, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I really would attend. I mean, she's fascinating to listen to because she talks a lot about how you need to stay in more in a reality position, you know, even
right.
when you have high expectations for yourself, because she had a breakout year last year. So she was going into this year thinking, man, this is going to be the best. And then to go through those little setbacks, you know, when you think you're doing something good, it is an interesting position. So.
Right. And as you get with the longer distance also, it becomes more mental than it is physical. So, like you said, it definitely you have to make sure not only are you, you know, healthy body, you know, body-wise, but as mentally as well. I mean, it takes both parts to be a successful athlete, I believe.
Done.
So.
All right.
Nice.
I am going to not take you longer than the time I agreed. So TrishaO'Hara.com is the place to get a hold of you. From that, thank you very much, Tricia, for coming on the show today.
Of course. Thank you all you listeners for continuing to support us. Tune
yes,
in next
absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely.
And,
all right, man. So look you
yeah. All right. Talk later.
All right. That is our show for today. Thank you all for listening. This will actually turn out to be a taped interview. It will be aired on, or re-aired, I suppose, on Wednesday. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Hopefully that was great information. I guess to summarize it all, in the end, you have to realize that science is important, but you do have to take your time to understand that there's reality. And there might be two sides. I mean, you think about it. We had a top triathlon coach talk about using an MP3 player and talking about the technique and the injuries on the other side. And then we had another position where it was something that really liberated. But you need to be focusing on your technique. So I think there's a lot to be said with what Chris was talking about. But in the end, that's the beautiful thing about life is you can figure out for yourself and figure out what works out better for you. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We look forward to chatting with you again on Friday when Sean Goodsell will be back to talk about mental toughness and some different, just fantastic. I mean, we always end up going someplace we didn't expect. So thank you all. Look to talk to you again on Friday.
You have been listening to the McCarthy Project, and remember to always attack life and sport.